kings also dispensed justice, which was another power granted by the gods to the king. Hammurabi left the most detailed example of this royal duty in his law code, but the theme appears consistently in royal sources. Divine approval granted to a ruler could be taken away, and Mesopotamian cultures found evidence for this in omens, the assassination of a ruler, or his death on the battlefield, and these all indicated that he had lost the favor of the gods. In contrast to the many scenes of rulers in the company of gods that we've examined in this course, both figures on the Sasanian relief are of equal size. And you'll remember that it was typical for the gods to be portrayed as larger than mortals. When Naram-Sin, the son of Sargon of Akkad, created a cult for himself in the 23rd century BC, his stele showed him adopting the accessories and the larger size of a god. Mesopotamian kings most often chose to present themselves as the mortal closest to the gods rather than as divinities in their own right. The power over life and death that kings wielded would have convinced most of their subjects that they were indeed in very close contact with the gods. Beneath the king and the Sasanian god are the figures of fallen enemies, and there's no interaction between either the king or the deity with these victims, unlike many earlier cultures in which we've seen either the king himself inflict death, the god on his behalf, as in the stele of the vultures in the Louvre, where the god Ningirsu takes the battlefield on behalf of his city. The Assyrians are probably the most memorable of rulers who triumph on the battlefield, and we see them joined with their army, attacking entire cities and celebrating what strength the army and the king himself has as the representative of the god Ashur. Rulers required an imposing setting to show off their special status. The 7th century AD Sasanian palace at Ctesiphon incorporates this ancient concept. Only part of the throne room survives today, but it was the largest covered arch, it's actually a barrel vault that roofed the throne room, standing approximately 80 feet wide, 110 feet high, and 160 feet long. This was the largest arch ever built in Persia. Palaces have supplied us with most of the evidence for how a king presented himself to his subjects. By setting himself apart in large structures with elaborate decoration, the king could present the resources that he controlled. Fragments of gold-covered mosaics have been found at Ctesiphon and demonstrate that the Sasanians continued this long-standing tradition. Another type of artifact found and commonly attributed to the Sasanians takes us back to this idea of royal luxury. As we discussed with the concept of Persian wealth and how this was received by Greek and later Roman authors, that the wealth the Persians controlled was enormous, something beyond the scope of anything that the Greeks had ever encountered. And we saw examples of this Persian wealth in the gold and silver vessels that kings and the elite would drink from. One of the problems with interpreting the cultural aspects of these Persian vessels is that they lacked an archaeological context. And the same situation occurs for Sasanian metal vessels. We have over 100 that are attributed to the Sasanians, but once again, very few have an excavated context. So we have to date them to the Sasanian culture based on stylistic motifs, and also the idea that using luxury goods was important for the Sasanian rulers and noblemen. Foreign invaders, the Arabs, toppled the Sasanian Empire in 651 AD, bringing with them a new religion, Islam.